Blog Talk Radio.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information. Wednesday listening audience, and welcome to the King Street Show. I'm your host, King, and I hope everybody out there is safe and dry and still practicing the CDC recommended guidelines of social distancing, staying 6 feet away from each other, and constantly washing your hands for about 20 seconds. So I hope everybody is on that path and still in that kind of mindset and staying healthy and safe. And I want to welcome to the show my co-host, Mr. Andre Smith. How you doing today, Andre?
Doing excellent, King. Happy to be here, brother.
Happy to have you. And as we like to start off each show with a moment of gratitude, so today I'm grateful for my life, for my health, for my ability to be able to see, hear, walk, talk, breathe, and have a sound mind. I'm thankful for another 24 hours. Another day to pursue my purpose in life, and I'm also thankful for the love and support of all my friends and family members as well. And Mr. Smith, what are you grateful for this afternoon?
Yeah, so many things, King. First and foremost, for my relationship with my Lord and Savior. You know, without Him and His grace and mercy, you know, where would I be? And so I have to start there. But secondly, as you said, relationships, community, family, having purpose in my life, understanding that it's not about me, but it's about my ability to motivate, to inform, and to inspire other people for their purpose that's within each and every one of them. And so today, you know, inspiration, the ability, I'm grateful for the ability and the platform to inspire others.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with that being said, how's your week been?
Very productive. I'm mindful now not to say busy, because I understand that people can be busy being busy. And so busy does not imply that anything is getting done. And so I reframe that and say that I've been very productive. So I've been able to produce some things, some of the things for immediate consumption and others for future consumption. So I've been in the process of planting, but I also been fortunate to be able to do some harvesting this week as well.
Oh, that's what's up. Harvesting's always good. So I'm glad to hear.
And it is, but harvesting comes with a responsibility, right?
Absolutely.
Because if you harvest and you've taken something out, then you have to replenish, right? So
absolutely.
Harvest is just a continual cycle.
Absolutely, absolutely. But, you know, the key thing in that sentence as well is, in order for you to harvest, you got to first plant, and you got to plant at the right time.
Yes, sir. Right,
you know,
time, right conditions, right? Because you can plant the right thing, but at the wrong time, and you're not going to yield the fruit.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that's a universal principle that I like to believe in, that, you know, there's certain things we might want to happen a certain way, but universally, there's principles out there, like the principle of gravity. You know, you can want as much as you want and hope and pray that if you hold an object up and just let it go, that it's going to stay suspended in air, but it's not. It's going to fall. You know, so just as you can hope and pray that if you don't plant in the fall, I mean, you don't plant in spring, you're not going to harvest in the fall. no matter how hard you try to work in the summer, you can work as much as you want. Say, I'm really working hard for this fall harvest because I miss spring, but I'm going to work extra hard in summertime to make up for it. Just that's not going to produce the same results.
And I agree, King. And this is how we can bring it full circle in real estate. Is sometimes, and there may be some people out there who are listening to us who may be in one of three stages. They might say, hey, I really want to invest in real estate. I just want to find the right time to be able to do that. There may be some other people who have gotten into real estate, and maybe they haven't gotten the results that they desired, right? So maybe it's a lack of direction, motivation. It even could be education. Maybe they don't have the tools that they need in their toolbox to move forward. And so my point is, understand that in every season there is a purpose. And so there'll be some seasons where you just need to till the ground. So you need to just stir some things up in you. There's some gifts and some talents that you may already have that are transferable. So I encourage the person who's coming into real estate investing saying, hey, I don't know all the answers. Well, that may be true, but take a personal assessment. What is it that you do know? What is it that you have been successful for in a past life, in a past career, and what are those transferable skills that now you can bring to real estate investing? And so there's a chance to till, to turn the ground up. There's a time to prepare the ground, right? There's some things that you need to put into the ground, whether you have, you know, whether it's compost, if we're talking organic, or whether it's chemicals, if you're talking about pesticides to get rid of the weeds so that it doesn't choke out the plants. Once the plants start to come up, you want to make sure that they're going to be able to bear fruit. And so I say that to say is that all these things have seasons, as we're talking about how the earth replenishes itself. So it is in investing, is that there should be something that you're doing every single day. So yes, you may not be harvesting every day, but you should be planting, you should be watering, you should be tilling, you should be pulling up the weeds, you should be, you know, talking to other farmers in this analogy. What are they planting? Where are they planting? What type of crops? What type of yield are they getting? Is there ways that I can introduce some other things into the process, be it hydroponics? So can I introduce something else that can increase that growth cycle, right? The sun, am I getting the proper amount of light and nutrition, photosynthesis for these plants to have the best chance possible to be able to yield the production that I need? And so if I was to encourage them, it's to say, hey, every season comes, every season goes, but there should be something that you should be doing in every single season with the anticipation that you're going to be able to bear fruit.
Absolutely, absolutely. And as you just said, you know, it's a consistent work, you know, and I liken that nurturing, that tilling the soil, that watering to studying, you know, researching the area that you want to purchase in and understand the economics before you even get started in real estate. You know, what's driving those home prices? You know, don't just buy because somebody said that here's the comps in this area and, you know, you should move on it. But what is causing those comps to be what they are? How long have those comps been that way? Is that a good 6-month comp? Is it a 2-year comp? Has it gone up dramatically in the last year? Has it gone down? Has it stayed steady? You know, has it stayed steady? And what's causing that? You know, understanding, you know, from a context of what are the building supplies? What's the cost for building supplies now? So if you're going to be doing your analysis as far as how much something's going to cost, has building supplies gone up since the last time you've done a renovation? You know, have you been to Home Depot? Have you been talking to the other contractors to see what the labor rates are? You know, all those things need to be thought through from a business planning perspective, and liken those to that, the planting the seed, the watering, the things that doesn't necessarily produce revenue, but definitely prepares you to be a better farmer and make sure that when it's time to harvest, you've actually have done the work, the research, put the love, the attention to it, the attention and the intention on it to produce the results you're looking for.
Absolutely. And have a little confidence in the process, right? If you put that seed in the ground today and you come back and water it tomorrow, you're not going to have a plant tomorrow. you're not going to have a plant the next day. But it's that consistent setting up the conditions for that plant to thrive, which is giving it the proper nutrition, which is feeding the soil and all the things. And so you're not going to see results tomorrow. That this is in real estate investment is a process, it's a business, and it's a business that you can do very well in, but it requires you to be consistent and persistent, and that's the only way that you're going to actually be able to yield the plant and be able to harvest is every day doing something to grow that business, even if you don't see the results.
Absolutely. And see, I think that's a key thing, too, that's where that faith comes into play, of understanding how universal principles work, that you may not be seeing the results immediately, but you know that if I stay steadfast to this and I continue to put my effort in and I continue to have faith and I continue to pray and move forth this, that there will be a harvest when the time is right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so those are some definitely key things that I'm glad you brought that up as far as your gratitude, because those are some key applicable I would say thought process, mentality, how you want to see your real estate investing, you know, using different analogies so you can really get serious about it. Because a lot of these gurus who offer you courses just teach you any kind of technique, and they're charging you thousands of dollars to learn one specific strategy, a technique in real estate investing. And they get straight to the technique without helping you understand, do you have the proper mindset? Are you willing? Have you thought about your budget over a 7-month period of time? See, I always tell folks, and I got this from understanding marketing, and I apply it to everything. Anytime you're going to get involved with anything from a business standpoint when it comes to investing in it, you know, like a tool or a marketing campaign or maybe even paying for a consultancy service, you know, I believe that you want to look at it from a context of, do you have a budget for 7 months of that? You know, because if you could only, you know, market, you only got $1,000 and your marketing budget is $500 a month, that means you can only do it for 2 months. You can't do it for 2 months and then expect a large result on the back end. It's going to need time to nurture. You got to get that feedback. You may have to change and modify. You know, are you putting your videos up at the right time? Are you putting your content out there at the right time? Are you putting your posts at the right time? Are you using the right platforms where your target market's at? You know, all that has to be measured and looked at and quantified over a 6-month period of time, and that adapting and taking in that data, it helps you correct the ship. So by month 7, you should be looking for some return if you stay consistent with that. And that's whether it's studying, that's whether it's driving around neighborhoods and picking out houses, that's whether it's going to actual open houses and walking through and getting an idea of what a finished house is selling for in the neighborhood you want to develop. And how does it look? What's the competition doing to their renovations that's driving those sales? Are they finishing the basement, or are they not finishing the basement? You know, or are they adding, when it's, you know, Baltimore City has, one of the things that people have to be mindful of Baltimore City has a lot of 3-bedroom, 1-bath configurations. And so the question becomes, from a renovation standpoint, if the budget's there and the comps are there, do you want to make that third bedroom into a bath and maybe have 2 bedrooms and 2 baths? I know some people shy against that because they say, you know, the more bedrooms you have, but after living in a house here in Baltimore City for a while that had 1 bathroom, it's like if you are a person that's single or you have just one, you have guests, you don't really want everybody coming to your house using your bathroom. You know, you want to be able to have a guest bathroom that people can go in that's not yours, that you don't have to worry about sharing. So sometimes, you know, having a 2-bedroom, 2-bath can be more applicable. But you shouldn't just make the decision in a vacuum. You should make the decision based on research, based on understanding your target market. And also, what I recommend highly is pre-selling that house before you even finish, so that you already got a buyers lined up like in a pipeline ready to pull the trigger for you. So selling it is not a question of if, it's just a matter of when you got to finish, and then helping that buyer get to the be able to be qualified so they can actually purchase their property and create that win-win scenario.
Yeah, so in real estate, and I'm coming from the practitioner's perspective as being a licensed real estate broker for over 20 years, there's a term in real estate called functional obsolescence. Functional obsolescence, so that's a big fancy way to say that the functionality of the property doesn't work or needs to be readdressed, right? It's saying how people live their life. Is the functionality in terms of design, in terms of layout, in terms of features, in terms of benefits, is it in line with the way that people live their life? And so what you find is, particularly, you know, Baltimore cities, you have some properties that are several hundred years old, right? It's over 100
right.
years old. So how people were living their life at that time was much different than how people are living their life now. So one example I give people is to say, in most cases, you need to think about heavy enough electricity, which is bringing additional power into the property. And say, oh, well, you sure I would need that? And I said, well, think about it. If you have the internet going and then you have now a refrigerator with stainless steel and it's side by side that's pulling that type of current, and you have all these other gadgets that's going in the house at the same time, that's going to be a large pull on an older house that wasn't equipped to run that amount of electronics. If you think about it, in those days, people tend to be in one room, right? They didn't move around
right.
often. They moved around, you know, at the beginning of the day and at the end of the day. But here you have people in multiple parts of the house simultaneously doing multiple things. So functional obsolescence is an example of, you know, how you live your life and does the house match that lifestyle. And so one full bath, in 2020 for a family of four and five is probably not ideal.
Absolutely. And I like the term you use, functional obsolescence. Say that one more time for a listening audience,
functional
for me as well.
Obsolescence.
Okay, functional obsolescence. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a, you know, I always look at myself and learning a new word. And so that could definitely be my new word of learning today. But I definitely can see where that's been thought through and can be applied. And that's a perfect segue into what our topic is today, which is creative financing. And, you know, I'm a person that believes creative financing really begins with the exit strategy. You know, if you got a creative exit strategy as far as how you want to finish that property, that can attract the financing, you know, and how you go about, you know, acquiring a property. And what I mean by what I'm saying is that, to your point about functional obsolescence, is that if you realize that you're building a property, you're developing a neighborhood, again, going back to Baltimore City, since Baltimore City has such a variety of housing types from a residential standpoint, that, again, if you're dealing with a house that's three-bedroom, one-bath, and not really understanding your market, that you may want to shift to a two-bedroom, two-bath, or you may even, you know, may finish the basement and add a half bath down there and still doesn't take away one of the bathrooms, how you know about how to go about structuring that is analyzing that deal and being able to put your numbers together. And like I said, if you also can add the exit strategy to that plan, then seeking financing can definitely be much easier for you than just saying, okay, well, I've ran my numbers. Hopefully this is what I get, you know, based on what the market's telling me. I should be able to sell it for this and this price in 90 days, and it should only cost me X to renovate. And so now my acquisition cost is going to be W, for example. So how do I go about getting the financing for that deal? And I think that a lot of that comes back into some of the things we talked about earlier, which is relationships, already having relationships with certain people who are either I like to use private lenders because I think that's a better source. And if you have a relationship with them, you're using keep the same terms if you've been able to be successful and deliver and have a proven track record. But if you're just getting started out, you don't really have the relationships with private lenders, then there's other sources like hard money. And hard money, you know, the name has a very that term to me has always had a not positive term to it. You know, you're just saying the term hard money. It just you just know that something's different about how that money is structured. If you don't know what hard money, the definition of what hard money means, you know that something different than just regular money. And then when you find out that what it is it's dealing with smaller lenders who are going to charge you typically double-digit return as far as interest, what they're looking for, and they may even charge more points up front to borrow their money, and then you have it for a short period of time, and they're going to be much more specific about what deals they fund, and then you realize, okay, now I've got a better understanding of why it's called hard money, at least from my perspective. But as we talk about creative financing, Mr. Smith, I just want to bring you back into this discussion to see what are your thoughts about with some investors, and let's start with maybe not so. Let's don't start with the new investor. Let's start with a investor consultant who's coming to you, someone who may have done three or four deals. What would you recommend for that person who has some experience in renovating properties, but now this new deal they're looking at, they are not clear where they're going to get financing or get funding from? What kind of checklist or what would you recommend for them to start thinking about how to get this deal funded?
Yeah, so that's a great question, King. So, you know, as you alluded to, I kind of wear, you know, three hats, sometimes more than three. And so when I give, you know, my experience, it could be experience as I'm a real estate broker and have been representing clients, investor clients for over 20 years as a traditional brokerage, but then also as an investor. So I've bought properties myself for renovation and for investment purposes. So we represent clients as well as perform ourselves. So just for setting the context, right, I don't assume that everyone knows, you know, what you mean when you say certain things like alternative financing and creative financing. I like to use the word alternative. Again, the creative financing, I think, has a more negative connotation just for me personally, because when you say you're doing something creatively, that may or may not be above board, right? It may imply that creative is you're fudging something. So I say alternative financing. And the reason why I say alternative is because it depends on the situation and the circumstance. So it's like kind of like having a financial toolbox. And so when you have a financial toolbox, you have all these tools in your toolbox. And depending on what the job is, it's going to determine which tool you use. So I don't necessarily look at it as this one is better than that one. You know, traditional financing is better than alternative financing, or traditional is better than hard money. I say, okay, well, what is the situation? And so alternative financing, just very simple, is just a way of acquiring property. It could be land or property, a way of acquiring land or property with little or minimum risk or cash as possible. So I use the word risk and cash interchangeably, right? So in real estate, you want to minimize your risk and as best as possible, minimize the cash, your outlay of cash. But what we have to keep in mind is that real estate is reciprocal, meaning that there's different cycles and at different times, different things are happening. And when the market is not as healthy, then there's usually more buying opportunity. But it's more expensive to borrow from traditional banks where, because, again, risk assessment when the market is low. But banks are more willingly to lend when the market is high. But if the market is high, then at that point it's more expensive to borrow money. So because the market is reciprocal, there has to be other things that can offset this. And creative financing is one way to do that because the market is reciprocal. Then what tool do you need at the time that the market is up? What tool do you need at the time that the market is down? So as you mentioned, you know, you mentioned lease option and those are, again, tools to alternative financing. Owner financing is another one. So there's several different ones that we can get into later in the discussion as to which tool to use in certain situations, and I can kind of give you some personal you know, backstories of how I've used alternative financing. But to answer your question, King, is in terms of an investor who may have done a couple different deals, and where should they be seeking, you know, financial options, I would say, you know, you're looking at the market conditions. So the current market conditions, the money supply is tighter. So traditional lenders are going to scrutinize the deal. And you got to think about the particular deal, meaning how much time do I have to execute this deal? So if I have 24 hours, 48 hours, 72 hours, then a traditional bank in most cases is not an option. So at that point, I'm either using my personal finances or I'm looking for another way to fund this deal. So one of the considerations is, what is the property type? What is the property condition? You know, what is the property location? Because all those things are indicators as to who might be your best funding partner. And then, you know, sometimes the best funding partner is the current owner. So we can talk about different ways where you can bring the current owner in as a solution, as a financing resource for you in your toolbox with, say, like an owner finance type of arrangement.
Right, right. Now, when you say owner finance, you talk through a little bit about what that looks like, just so that
our
listening audience can be clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in a traditional, so I'll do a traditional versus owner finance. So in a traditional situation, you have a seller. The seller owns the property, so there's a deed that transfers from the seller to the buyer when that property is purchased. So usually that's done by a title agent or at a title company or even an attorney can execute that process, right? So the buyer gets the property. There's a bank involved, and so now the bank gives you a mortgage for the property in a traditional again, and then that money goes from the bank to the seller at closing. So at closing, the seller gets a big pot of money. That money comes from the bank via through the buyer agreeing that they're going to repay that loan to the bank, and then that flows to the seller. So there might be a down payment. That down payment would go directly to the bank to offset their risk. Again, we're talking about risk, and it offsets the bank's risk because you're coming with a deposit, so they're feeling more comfortable about you doing the transaction, and that's how that happens, and everyone is off and set. At closing, you sign your documents, the buyer gets the keys, the bank has a deed that they now record and saying that you're responsible for this note, seller gets their money, and they leave. What I'm proposing in a non-traditional transaction that would have an owner finance is the seller would basically take the role of the bank. So there's a deed in place, same scenario. The buyer agrees to buy at a said price. Seller agrees to sell at a said price. Instead of the bank providing the financing, now the seller has agreed to self-finance the buyer. So they may require a down payment. So say the house is, you know, $50,000, and the seller may say, okay, if you come up with $10,000, I'll finance the $40,000 for you. So at the meeting of the minds, at the settlement, buyer signs documents, maybe a promissory note or some document, some financial instrument to say that they are responsible for the debt of $40,000 to the seller. The seller agrees, and they countersign. And now the buyer gets the keys, the seller now gets $10,000, and the buyer agrees to make payments to the seller based on the terms, whether that's 5 years, 10 years, 20 years with a balloon. It could be structured many different ways. But the point here is the buyer will make monthly payments until the debt is satisfied to the seller. So the bank is removed out of the equation completely. So in terms of how much time it takes to facilitate the deal, you really can do this type of deal in hours versus weeks and months with a traditional lender.
Okay. So I like that. And actually, you know, one of the techniques, strategies I use, because my niche that I like to focus on is lease options. And owner financing comes into play with several of these options I'm currently involved in right now. And so I understand and know how owner financing can definitely be, as you call it, alternative, a great source of alternative financing, primarily because, again, my whole philosophy around everything that I do, for folks who know me, is about relationships. And you get a chance to develop a relationship directly with the owner of the property. You know, anything can happen from a financing standpoint, you know, as far as down payment can be bartered, monthly payments can be bartered, whether you're going to who's going to handle the maintenance on it on a property on a monthly basis, either you or the seller, depending on which one of you all, you know, of you. I often will give the investor or the property owner his purchase price if he's willing to take care of the monthly maintenance over the term. And again, every deal is subject to its own, you know, analysis. But the alternative financing is key in that context because I approach it as you're solving a problem. And if the problem may be you don't have the 20% to put down, but you can come up with some other way that can be worked out, and you still can create a win-win where the property owner is satisfied and you, the investor who's buying the property, is satisfied, then that to me is where real estate really sings, and that you're going to be able to have a productive deal because both of you all have done your analysis, both of you all have looked at the numbers, and both of you all have come up with a way that it's beneficial that both parties walk away happy and satisfied. Now, I've heard the expression that in real estate, and I don't know if this is, I don't know if I necessarily agree with this or not, but I'm going to ask you your opinion on this. I've heard the expression that in real estate, no person should walk away from the table completely satisfied or completely happy. In other words, there should be some give from both parties. What are your thoughts about that as it relates to negotiations concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I could understand where people are coming from when they say that. You know, but I'm an optimist. I truly believe that you can create win-win situations. I think that when people tend to go in with the attitude, if I win, you lose, it kind of backs you into a corner, right? I would rather say, you know, we both can win, right? Because why can't we both win? Because we both have our goals are not the same. So because our goals are not the same, I don't have to satisfy your goals, and you don't have to satisfy my goals necessarily. But if we both are able to mutually get our goals satisfied, there's no reason why we can't have a win-win. So I'll take for example, if you have a property, and say, for instance, you have a property and right now you live out of town, it's hard for you to maintain that property, it's hard for you to keep it up. That property, for, you know, lack of a better word, can be a burden to you. So you're paying taxes on it, you're trying to keep it up, you know, it's plight, you know, there's risk that people can break into the property, you can get fees because the property's not being kept up. And so there's a lot of things that could go wrong in that scenario. So an investor comes along and says, hey, you're currently, I see that you're having problems securing a tenant. The property is vacant. I see you have fees. You know what? You were expecting how much rent on this property when you bought it? Because obviously this wasn't your plan, was to buy a property that just sits. And they said, oh, you know what? I thought I could rent this property for $500 a month. And you said, hey, I'll tell you what. Would you be interested if I was to take this property over from you? Now, there would probably be some minimal things that I still would need you to do in terms of paying taxes and anything you would do for a normal tenant. If the air conditioner goes out, I'll be looking to you. But I'll tell you what, you wouldn't have to worry about the month-to-month. I'll pay for all the upkeep. I'll make sure everything is done pristine. And I tell you what, if you give me a master lease, because I'm a business person, I'm not going to live in the property, I would like to sublease this property out. So I'll find a tenant. I won't charge you anything. And then whatever I charge the tenant will be between me and the tenant, but I will guarantee you that I'll pay you $500 a month. Does that sound fair to you? Well, that's absolutely a win-win, because now if I go in and spend $2,000 to update the property and now I can now rent the property for $1,000, then I have a $500 positive cash flow every single month. So that works for me as the investor. it works for the owner because now I've taken something off of his plate in terms of responsibility, but more importantly, I've created positive cash flow for him for every single month. And so I think those situations are being created every single day in real estate where you can create win-win scenarios if your approach is not if he wins, I lose, right? Finding something
right.
that's mutually beneficial, right? Finding some common ground.
Right, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that common ground is key. So as we talk about some other alternative financing, let's talk a little bit about your experience and your thoughts about hard money and when hard money may be a applicable strategy or a source of financing to implement.
Yeah, so again, it depends on the situation and the property. And also it depends on the alternative. What else is in the market, right? Is it a market where traditional financing is available? Is it a deal that I need to get into right away? Because, you know, when I'm looking at traditional financing, you know, I have to put in an application. I have to get approved. There's underwriting. There's conditions. There's appraisals. There's a lot of things that go into that process. You know, what is it going to cost? What's the cost of the money? What is the interest rate and the terms and the fees and those kind of things are considerations. So some of the advantages of hard money or the deals that work best for hard money are deals that are ones that you need to get in quickly. It could be ones that are not financeable, right? Every property is not financeable as it relates to traditional funding. Right. So there's
right.
properties that lenders just will not fund for various reasons. So that could be one of your best options. The one thing I would say about private money is oftentimes people, you know, they look at private money under the same lens that they look at traditional funding. And so understand the terms are going to be vastly different. Why? Go back to the word I used earlier with this risk. So real estate is all about risk. Hard money is a much riskier loan than traditional because you're not asking in some cases for all the paperwork and approvals that you would get under traditional financing. So there is a little bit of risk there on the money side. But my point is it's the cost of doing business. So if your traditional bank is going to give you, you know, a 7% interest rate, you shouldn't be expecting a 7% interest rate on a hard money loan, right? It's going to be higher, right? But you need to understand that that's the cost of doing business. So to see if that is a good proposition or not, you have to factor that into your overall cost. So in terms of your carrying cost. So what I tend to do and I recommend investors do and most lenders now is requiring is your escrowing. So when you go to settlement, instead of having to come to the hard money lender and settle on the property and pay points and those types of other fees and expenses that you might pay, and then say, you know, a month later, you're now having to make a mortgage payment, and obviously you haven't gotten a return on your investment yet because the property's still being renovated, you might want to escrow 6 months of payments, right? It might cost you a little
right.
bit more going into the deal up front, but you can sleep at night because you're not on the clock. You have 6 months to be able to get into the project and to turn the project. And so I would say proper planning and looking at the overall business side of the transaction makes hard money attractive in some cases. But there's probably at least three or four other alternative financing that I would explore as well, you know, depending on, again, your situation and the property to see if it meets those conditions. So you had mentioned, you know, we talked about owner finance. We talked about lease option. Lease option is a great way to get into a property with little to no money down and control the property, right? So you're controlling the property through the lease, but then also you keep open your and with the price, right, for future purchase, but you leave your options open to be able to purchase the property at a later date. But let's say you've been on your job for 15 or 20 years, and let's say you have an IRA, right? So a self-directed IRA is just another way to be able to use alternative financing. Alternative is anything other than a traditional bank, right? So you could use your 401k. You know, you could use investment clubs. You could use crowdfunding, right? Getting other people that you know, like and trust, who is looking to invest in real estate as well, and pooling your funds together. So all these are, in my mind, big picture, are alternative finance, and it's ways to be able to fund deals, minimize your risk, minimize the cash that you have to bring, but more importantly, to be able to control a property without necessarily having to go through that long laundry list that the bank will require.
Right, right, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that we really want to make sure that people really understand is that there's always a way in real estate, which is why I like real estate, or should I say I love real estate as a investment vehicle. It's because there's ways that you can structure things out of nothing. Like you can actually go out and you can literally start off with no money down. Now, again, it's much more challenging and it's much more difficult. And I definitely don't want to imply that it's easy. I'm just saying that it's possible. But I think it all comes back down to your level of knowledge, your competence, and, of course, the amount of social capital you have with your ability to be able to execute what I'm about to lay out, which is being able to start off with no money and be able to bring in partners with you, someone who has maybe cash but doesn't have time. And so this is the person that has money in their 401k, their thrift IRAs, and so they're sitting there and they're saying, I got $20,000, $30,000 that I want to put into action. I want to put this money into some form of active real estate investment strategy. And I don't really have the time to go out here and look for properties, look for deals, hire contractors, manage contractors, and then sell my property, et cetera. But I just want a return on my money. So you form a relationship with that individual and you work out the terms of what they're getting for that capital. It may be a 20% return. It may be a 12% return. It may even be a 50-50 return, depending on where the risk factor is and what you're bringing to the table to help offset what they're bringing to the table. And then you may have a person who's great at going to find deals. And this is a person that just constantly stays on the internet, constantly stays on meetup forums, constantly goes to real estate groups, and he's a member of several different real estate groups. So he's constantly getting properties sent to him. And he may be great at having access to properties. So now you got a financier who can put up the initial down payment, maybe the acquisition costs, and maybe have the credit to qualify for the loan. Then you have the person who is a property person who can actually find the deals. Then you got to look at what your role is. And your role is maybe I'm the person that's going to find the exit buyer on the back end. Or I'm the person that has the most time and the most experience in real estate. So once the property is identified, I'm going to make sure I manage the process from the contractors doing the work from start to finish. And that way you may be splitting, and you may split that a third, a third, a third, depending on each person's responsibilities, experience, and what they're looking to get out of it. But the point I'm making is you can always find ways to structure real estate deals. And if you find the right team around you, you get the right partners around you, and you find the right deal that has a margin or a spread, then things can be created to create a deal that many people may walk away from by saying either A, I don't have the money, or B, I can't find properties.
Yeah, no, I agree, King. I think it goes back to what you just said is paramount, which is, you know, what is the deal? You know, what is the deal? Looking at the property, looking at the property is going to help determine which of these tools that you're going to need in your financial toolbox, but it's also going to determine who else are you going to need to be a partner or to be associate to bring this to fruition. Are you an investor that has a construction background? You know, are you an investor who's a licensed realtor? Are you an investor? So in your toolbox, what are you bringing to the deal? And that's going to determine how you leverage, right, those different resources that you have to make this happen. So funding is just one small part of that, but you're absolutely right. Is having the right people on the team and just being honest with yourself, making that personal assessment to say, okay, what are my strengths and what am I bringing to this transaction? And that's going to determine, you know, the role that I play, right? But then also be open to, okay, there's some other pieces that I might be missing here that's going to be required to pull this off. you know, I bought my very first property in my early 20s, a land purchase through a land contract owner finance. So I purchased the land in Georgia, a little area called Waynesboro, Georgia, outside of Augusta, which is where they have the Masters every year. Probably one of two things that Augusta is known for, the Masters, and it's the birthplace of James Brown. So a lot of people go there, yeah, to see the house that he lived in. And so those two things are world famous. But, yeah, I bought it from the landowner. We wrote up a contract, and as you do it in the South, we did it on the hood of his car. And he was an attorney, and he drafted up the land contract. I agreed to give him a down payment of $300. And I paid him $120 a month. And that was it. It was owner finance. He financed the rest. We agreed to what the overall price of the land is going to be. And as I made my monthly payments, it chipped away at the principal of what I owed. But he became my bank. And my very first real estate deal was done through owner financing.
I like that.
So
I like
the property. I control the property with $300. $300 contract, $300 deposit, and I was responsible for $110 a month.
Wow.
Those
now, that's definitely a deal. Now,
the
what would you say,
mm-hmm.
what would you say was his motivation for willing to engage in that particular transaction or agree to those
yeah.
terms that you outlined?
Right. So as I said earlier, you have to remember that real estate is reciprocal, right? So there's different peaks and valleys. About every 7 to 10 years, you know, there's some new things that's introduced into the real estate cycle, right? And
right.
at that time, it was very difficult to finance land, right? So this was land was unimproved. So there was no improvements on the land. There wasn't a house there. And so to be able to go to the bank, it was very difficult to be able to go to the bank and get funding on that type of transaction. And so what that seller understood and realized is, hey, I can create a win-win. If I'm willing to hold the paper on this and self-finance it, there's more people out there that have $300 to be able to go into a land contract, then they may be able to go to the bank and get the financing for, I think it was maybe $10,000 at the time. I think it was 4 acres that I bought for $10,000. But that $10,000 was hard to come by bank financing because of the type of, and so to answer your question, that's what was attractive for him in the land contract, because it opened up to a whole new universe of buyers.
Okay. Now, what would you say that from a context of experience, that you level of experience that you need to have in order for you to negotiate that term?
Yeah, you know, King, I think, like I said earlier, I think the important thing about real estate is doing that self-assessment, is what are my abilities, what are my talents? And so the deal might be there, but you might need other people, one, to help you flush it out, or secondly, to help you structure it. So so I would say what someone would need to be able to move forward in that type of transaction, obviously knowledge, right? You want to educate yourself. You want to understand the risk, right, because there are some inherent risk in every single real estate transaction. And if you find that you are not confident having enough of either of those two things, then be open to bringing in a consultant or bringing in someone else that can help you structure those types of agreements so that you're protected first and foremost, and secondly, you'll be able to accomplish your goal.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, that brings mind to one of the deal I recently structured last year, which was a lease option deal, where the owner, I look for properties that have been on the market for some period of time. That's my criteria when I'm doing lease options. So I'm looking for a property that has been listed for at least, I would say, 90 days. And the reason I want the owner, the property owner, to have gotten a chance to get feedback from the market so they can really understand that the price they were looking for is not the best price. So they're not with any kind of false delusions of grandeur about the overvaluing that property. And once I see that, and typically I'm looking for properties that have come off the market, so that way I can talk directly to the owner, no pun intended, to the real estate professionals. And when I find that kind of deal where it's a property that had been recently listed, it's now expired, the owner is a little bit motivated because maybe they have two mortgages and the property is vacant, so that's something else I'm looking for. Is the property vacant? Has it been listed for more than 90 days? Is it an expired listing? You know, so those are the things I narrow down my search for. So as I find those properties that fit within that range, then we can begin to look at now what is the motivating factor for the owner. And so I have a questionnaire that I go through where, again, I put on my hat as a problem solver, not the investor hat, where I'm looking at how I can make money from it. I've already done that in doing my global search of how I'm going to benefit from it. But now I want to get specific to understand what the property owner is looking to get out of the deal. What do they need? Again, when you're structuring lease options, there's several different terms you're looking for. A term meaning who's going to pay, as I said earlier, who's going to take care of the maintenance? How important is price to that person? How important is a option down payment to that person? Because if a person's like 2 or 3 months behind on a mortgage and they need that initial down payment to bring the mortgage current, then that's something you have to factor in, that you got to come in with at least $5,000 to $7,000 in order to bring that property current. But the property is current and the person does not need to have that amount of money, but for them, their number one pain point that they're dealing with in their property is the fact it's time. They just don't have the interest or the time to be a landlord anymore. And they try to sell the property, it's not selling, and for them, it's a vacant property that's sitting there on the that wasn't sold. And so for them, getting it out of their hands is the most important thing. Well, now I'm going to approach them and see if there's any equity spread, maybe offer owner financing type of strategy. You know, so I just want to give our listening audience to understand the kind of thought process that I go through when you begin to implement those type of strategies. And again, I don't encourage lease options and owner financing for novice investors who are just getting started, who don't really understand the terms and how to structure these deals and don't have the real estate professionals to help you make sure that you put the property and you protect yourself and the owner's best interest. Like, for example, one of the common things that can go wrong with a lease option scenario is that if you don't really have a good relationship with the owner, and I recommend that maybe you should do this anyway, is put the property in a trust. Because if the owner, and you make a deal with the owner to say, I'm going to buy this property from you in 5 years, I'm going to buy it for $200,000, and they couldn't get $200,000, and that's great. But then in 5 years, the owner may end up having some other financial challenges. What's to prevent that owner from now going to his mortgage company and taking out the lien property if he has equity there? Borrow against the deal that you have. Tactics and strategies, that the caveat, the disclaimer, is you want to consult a real estate professional who's done these before, who has knowledge of utilizing these type of strategies and techniques before you try to implement them. Because if you do not, then you're not going to know what you're doing. This is not something you could just hear about on this radio, do a Google search, download some guru's application on agreement or contract to buy a property, and then go out here and try to execute. Because, again, and I can't state this enough, real estate is a business that's definitely one that prides on your lack of knowledge and your lack of skills. If you don't have the knowledge or the experience in real estate, then you will be taken advantage of. So I wanted to kind of lay that out there, Mr. Smith, to kind of really kind of bring things home, because we have about maybe 5 minutes left in the show. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity now, if you want to add another kind of take this with you nugget, or if you don't get anything else out of this discussion today, piece of nugget that you can leave with our audience?
Yeah, no, King, absolutely. So I guess the two things I'll say is, you know, we understand, right, with 20 years in real estate, we understand that everyone's not operating from the same amount of knowledge. And there's a lot of not only information, but there's a lot of misinformation out there in our space. And so we are committed to making sure you get the most timely approaches and strategies for real estate investing to make sure that you're able to build a legacy for your family and accomplish your financial goals. So to that commitment, we'll be providing training courses that would go into a little deeper. So what the idea is through this blog talk, we can have a conversation. We can understand what challenges you're currently facing, and then we can talk through a couple of those solutions here on this show. But obviously, we're only here for an hour, and so we're not going to be able to solve everyone's problem in an hour. Although we encourage you to send your questions and your comments, these training courses allow us to be able to dig deeper into the substantive matter that you do need to understand to be able to execute the strategies that we're discussing on the show. And so you'll see very soon some more information out that we'll be directing you to various classes. And if this is a class, something that you'd like more information on, I'm happy to develop a curriculum for that and make that available for anyone who's looking for alternative financing. So the other thing I'll say is kind of moving forward in each week, we will have something new that's going to be called the Real Estate Marketing Minute. And so what that's going to be brought to you by the Velocity Group, a full-service real estate broker, commercial, residential, and real estate development, your real estate development partner. So every week we're going to bring you the marketing moment, which is going to give you the update of the market conditions in the Baltimore and surrounding region. And so, again, that's our attempt to help you become more equipped with information and resources to be able to make better decisions and win in your real estate investment strategy.
Absolutely. And thank you for sharing that, Mr. Smith. And as Mr. Smith outlined, we're going to be having launching a product for called the Conscious Success Academy. We're going to be providing several different classes on business and real estate investing and development. Again, these classes are aimed at helping you understand how to go about building a business while you're quarantined at home and how you can begin to start doing the research, gathering the information, building the relationships and connections you're going to need in order to be successful in your business. And so continue to check our website at consciousrt.com, that's consciousrt.com. And then we're also going to have the Real Estate Nexus, which is the REI Nexus, which is a real estate directory platform. You can upload properties, find deals, as well as find other investors to connect with. And then lastly, we're going to have CB Nexus, which is Conscious Business Nexus, which is our membership directory as well. And we're bringing these directories, these platforms, and these online classes because while we're quarantined, you got to understand that there's a way that we can still build community, still educate and improve your competence and still begin to generate revenue and still make a difference. As we like to say, doing great by doing good. So with that being said, Mrs. Smith, please give the velocities or in your contact information for our listening audience.
Absolutely. So as King said, I'm the broker and operator of Velocity Real Estate Group. That's your full service, your conscious, socially conscious full-service real estate professionals. You can reach us at 240-317-9444, or you can reach us through our website at velocityregroup.com. That's VelocityReGroup.com.
Absolutely. And for those who have heard about this show through the meetup, we're going to be providing relevant information throughout the meetup group of when the class is going to be there, as well as webinars that we're going to have. So we're going to be putting a lot of content out there for you all to really understand the conscious way of real estate investing and development. And so, again, thank you, Mr. Smith, for your investment of time and energy today. Thank you, listening audience, for tuning in today. And as we go forth, please continue to be safe, be healthy, And more importantly, if above all else, let's be more conscious. Thank you.
King Street, DC Metropolitan News and Real Estate Information.